So, this is Russ Bickerstaff, here with Brian Myers and Liz Scheip, talking about their new show, Home for Christmas, at the Brumder Mansion. Hello, guys.
Hello.
Hello. Yes,
okay. And I guess I'd seen this on the schedule coming up, and I really, you know, it was just in the role of everything else, and I didn't know, you know, because Brumder has a whole lot of different stuff going on in over the course of... I think they've got another holiday show, right?
They did. They just did. Yeah. They did like a 2-3 night engagement of Christmas Carol, which was just two people, and it was kind of a staged reading of it. Then that was kind of it, and then now it's us. Now we're up.
Yeah, and just the title alone, I was like, oh, that's like a couple of people at a piano singing Christmas Carol.
You'd think so. Actually, I probably shouldn't admit this in an interview, but I was kind of pushed into naming it. I wasn't ready to name it. Yeah. And they were like, we need to put something on the schedule. And I literally just sat down and went, boom! And like sent it off. And I told Brian and I were going to discuss it together. And I had to send him a text that was really unfortunate. It was like, they made me pick something. I'm sorry.
Part of that, I have to take on part of that too, because we had talked about naming the show after one of the songs. It would be the title song. And I didn't have the song yet, so I didn't have a title to suggest, and they needed something to...
needed to start marketing, which is fair.
Yeah, yeah. They have their jobs to do, too.
Obviously, yeah. But yeah, so I like... And then I found out it's this whole thing, and then I was like, horror setting. It's like... You're doing like a new holiday show. December 25th is just, it's this sculpture that has been painted over so many times. It's, you know, what could you possibly do that would be even distinct?
Well, and see, that was part of the draw with this show, when I sat down and talked to Brian.
That would be the real challenge. I would, you know, I would just, as an artist, I would think that would be a headache.
Well, and the whole idea wasn't to reinvent the wheel. Sincerely, it's like everything has been done so many times. It's like people want to see something familiar around the holidays. They want to see something that feels like a show that they grew up with. So that was always the aim. It was to create something that felt like a musical that they might have watched, a special that they might have watched on TV growing up. So the feel is very much like an old movie musical. It's like Holiday Inn. It's like White Christmas. It's just got this nice homespun quality to it.
Mm-hmm.
But taking place at the Brumder, which was also very nerve-wracking because I've come off a year and a half of just doing Sherlock.
Yeah.
And it's like, now new people and characters with nothing to draw from. Enjoy! I was like...
And it's gotta be in a basement of a
And
mansion.
It's gotta be... And nobody can leave. Same set of challenges.
A captive audience, anyway.
Yeah.
It is a particular challenge, though, to come up with something that is both familiar and fresh. Mm-hmm. Liz said it. Something that it seems like you could already know. It was a particular challenge, but I thought a fun one.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and I think you read the script. I think it does well in that arena too. In certain terms of it feels nice and it feels comforting, but at the same time it doesn't. There are moments that do come a bit out of left field.
Right. Yeah, there's definitely enough to keep people interested, and it does seem like something that you might have seen in the best possible way. A lot of the classic, you know, like if we're just going to take holiday movies, ones that we can watch over and over, we can watch them over and over because they're that good and they have things enough that keep us coming back. And I felt like this script was like that.
Okay. But and then there's the whole horror for you too. I mean, what's more cliche than having to come up with Christmas music?
How to write a new old Christmas song? Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. It was a particular...
And limiting it to the era, too, I would imagine.
Right. Yeah, there were a lot of parameters, but I think I'm finding that those parameters can help you as much as they can hinder you, and sometimes more so.
Okay.
It narrows your field of choices about language usage in the lyrics and harmony in the music and even song form. There are certain song forms that come up in the
vocals and piano, right?
There will be some additional instrumentation. There will be one tune has guitar that'll be played by the actor who is singing
John
that
Galecki.
Song.
Okay,
so he'll accompany himself on that, and then we have some arrangements that are not with a full band, but with a rhythm section and a couple of a couple of instruments. So there's some variety in that way, too.
Okay.
Yeah, we have backing tracks being created by my younger brother. He's the jazz band director for the National Guard Army Band.
Oh, cool.
So he's putting together a nice little group to record those for us. And then,
like a little chamber thing?
Brian had an idea of what he wanted, and I assume that they're talking, or they're going to talk. They're getting done slowly.
Yeah. Chamber jazz is a pretty good way to put it.
Okay.
Piano, bass, and drums, some guitar,
a trumpet. Yeah, because that's what Kurt plays.
And maybe another reed player.
That's got to be tricky, because you're thinking again in terms of the space, too, and you don't want to, like, pull people too far out of the setting.
That's right. It needed to be instrumentation that you could believe was there behind the curtain. Right. If it had been a full 25-piece, you know, five trumpets, five trombones, and a saxophone section, it would have been less than believable.
Yeah.
Although, some of it was written in the script, and I was telling you this a little bit before, that if there is a backing track, there's a practical on the stage for why it's there. It always comes from the radio or the gramophone or something.
Yeah.
They turn something on and music happens. It's not like it just appears out of nowhere.
Oh, okay.
That wasn't...
It's not like scoring. It's like...
No, it's not underscoring. It's a very deliberate...
Us.
Yeah.
Deliberate is a great word.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, that it came from somewhere.
Yeah.
So that we weren't depending too much upon the people believing in the magic of live theater that suddenly there was music. It's exactly as Liz said, someone turns the record on, or John, in his case, pulls out the guitar and plays the song that he's been working on.
And there, we have myself and Amanda Hall and Kelly Doherty. It's set up that our characters during the war were a USO trio. So we do a medley of Christmas songs that are completely a cappella in three-part harmony. That Brian did just an incredible arrangement of some really nice stuff.
Well, they sound fantastic on it, and I think maybe, even though I really relished the opportunity to write new songs, I really love their USO trio. They just sound so good, and it's so much fun. And I like
you were writing new USO style, 1940s style.
Again, yeah, like a new old arrangements. Yeah, exactly. But you really can believe that, especially now that they've had some time to work together and they have ensemble, and it really sounds like they've been doing it for a while. I just enjoyed the dramatic sort of conceit that this is their showstopper in their USO show, and there's all kinds of opportunities for them to play to the audience, and it's a lot of fun, and they sound great.
Thank you.
Cool. Yeah, it seems did the characters come out of just hanging out at the Bronder and imagining, because that place would have been around in the 40s.
Yeah. Actually, more the script came out of my family, really.
Ah, okay.
Which my mom is terrified. She's really not. my dad is thrilled. He can't wait to see what I did to her. but yeah, it was. I just kind of sat down and I thought about how my family would react in specific situations in the holidays. I threw new situations on it, but how they would deal with things. And then I kind of, like, I wrote my dad, I wrote my brother, I wrote my mom, I wrote my older sister, which it's very close to home for me.
Okay.
But at the same time, the actors, we have a phenomenal cast, so they bring a lot to it. Like, I came in with some ideas, and then they took it over the edge. Like, there was a lot of it where Kelly and I would be... Kelly Doherty and I hang out every weekend in her apartment.
Let's say her
Saturday
name again, because she's great.
Kelly Doherty.
Kelly
you need
Doherty
to know she's in the show, because she is fabulous. But we'll be hanging out at, like, midnight, and we'll just start, like, riffing on an idea. There are a couple of really... Like, there's one thing, and I can't even really say what it is, but I can't get through it without just completely collapsing. Brian saw me try to do it the other night, and I couldn't.
She's right, she could not do it. I want to know who the Kelly Doherty in your family is. With a lot of these characters, because Kelly's character is a great archetype of what word would you like to use? Sort of a sassy, boy crazy.
She's a flirt. She's kind of a man-eater.
Yeah, man-eater, that's good.
Unfortunately, I will say that's the character that's modeled after me.
I thought maybe.
Yeah. You knew that. That's why.
That was a great character to write for too.
Okay.
We wrote her a great bluesy kind of vampy number, and she does a great job.
Yeah.
So the
and
fact
actually
that
the title of that was Kelly's idea.
That is true.
I came in and Brian and I were talking about all the songs we wanted. We got to Kelly's song and we were talking about it, and I was like, if it would be called something, Kelly and I have this idea, it would be called Bend You Till You Break. And then he went and wrote it.
Yeah.
You hear a lot
right now. There was an NPR story lately about the idea of choice and how sometimes limitless choices are are more troubled than we want to believe that they are. There was something about salad dressings and whether people were happy if they had 5 choices or 10 choices or 100 choices. And people liked 10 choices better than 5 choices, but they liked 10 choices better than 100, right? Yeah. So something like that, the fact that they came to me with the idea, well, here's an idea for a title. It was a great place to start. Mm-hmm. It was the first thing that I wrote down, and I just sort of built it out from there. And it's a great tune.
I love that song. I love that. And then Tom Marks, who is also on the show, and he's just got an amazing theater pedigree, which I think we've talked about before.
Yeah, yeah.
I think he was the original Duty in Greece in the workshop before it went to Broadway.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, like, he's just got this amazing, and we were, initially he wasn't supposed to sing in the show, and then I was like, oh, wait, no, why aren't we doing that? And Brian wrote this, started crying when I played it on my computer. He sent me the file, and it's called Ask Her Nicely. And it's just so pretty. It's really a lovely little piece, and I love that song. And Tom was kind of singing it while we were putting up Christmas decorations yesterday, and Amanda and I are both crying. And I hold it together.
You know you've done it when you get people to cry. It's a good thing.
Yeah, making people laugh, that's easy.
But getting them to cry, exactly right.
So, I mean, And that's the challenge, is it's an intimate venue, and you're playing a family.
Yep. Well,
but
we're,
I mean, you and Kelly, and
we have the
and
core
you've worked
family.
With Tom before, you know, so there's that familiarity.
There is, well, and see, that's the thing, though. The problem is here's kind of how the family tree works.
Okay.
Tom Marks plays the highest patriarch. He's the grandfather of this family.
Okay.
Just referred to as Pappy throughout the whole show. Pappy is the father of Birdie, and Birdie is played by Marcy Elst, who's also just amazing. And she's married to Randall Anderson, who plays Herb Wallace. So it's Herb and Birdie Wallace. Then they have their 2 sons, who are played by Mark Pruchinsky, and he plays Howie, and Fred, who's played by John Glowacki. Howie, Mark Pruchinsky, has just gotten married to Amanda Hull's character. Amanda Hull's sister is Kelly Doherty, and I'm just sort of a friend of the family. And then that's kind of how everybody fits in. So I'm actually not really part of the family, and I just wrote a part for myself where I was supposed to be socially awkward because I'm really good at that.
Liz was very intelligent in writing herself in, but not in a part that was too big, because she has a lot of other jobs.
Yes.
And you get better at that the longer you do it.
Right. You learn about how much you should take on in your own... in a project of your own creation, and so I admire the fact that Liz was smart enough not to write the biggest part for herself.
Thank you. And I think it's just more fun for me to watch other people say the words and sing your songs, because it's nice to get to sit back and be an audience member. You know, there's a good 40 minutes where I just get to sit and watch people, not in the actual show, but, you know, while I'm directing.
Yeah.
And we just had our first rehearsal last night. It is a typical Brumder schedule, 6 rehearsals, then you're up. For a musical, because I'm smart. We've had music rehearsals, though. That was the one thing that the girls sat down and went, nope, we're going to do more of those.
We did, and we've had a ball, but it's really a testament to the talents and the work ethic of this cast, I think, and you could probably speak to this, but the fact that it does get done in such a short amount of time is really unreal.
We blocked the whole show last night. It's completely blocked. We're just, now we're picking.
In some situations, you have 6 weeks of rehearsal. In this situation, there are 6 rehearsals in total.
And also, it's not making the show too long. I think that's another thing you learn about the Brumder. That space is kind of small and a little congested. And nobody wants to sit there for 2.5 hours.
Yeah.
You've got X amount of time that you're going to hold people's attention, and you've got to know what that is. And that was something Brian and I talked about, too. He was like, how long are you thinking the songs? I was like, oh, like no longer than 2-3. 2 minutes, maybe.
So you've got 2 minutes to make an impression.
Right, exactly.
In period.
Right.
And make it be catchy enough.
But again, it's another limitation, I think, that really forces you to distill, before the pencil even goes to the paper, what exactly is this song going to be about? Who is the singer singing to exactly, and what is the core of the sentiment?
Mm-hmm.
So, being really sure of those things before one even begins to write is actually a help. It takes maybe a little bit more time on the front end in terms of the conception of it, but once you get that close to what it is, then the lines start to come fairly easily. Mm-hmm. And I don't think I spent more than 2 hours in terms of the creation of any of these songs, in terms of once I was sitting in the chair with my legal pad and pencil writing the lyrics, they came pretty quickly once I knew what they were about. Mm-hmm. A lot of times that was aided by a long walk with the dog, just trying to figure out what a given song would be about. But once I got there, they came out pretty quickly, and it was a lot of fun.
It was the most amazing thing. We had breakfast one morning. We sat down, and Brian just had a bunch of questions. He sat down, he opened up a notebook, and he goes, "Okay, let's go through this point by point, each song, what you're looking for from each of them." Asked a bunch of questions, and I gave him as much information as I possibly could. A lot of character stuff on my end. Like, he brought up questions I hadn't even thought about character wise. I was like, "Oh, I'm gonna go home and do some rewrites." I think
we always have to consider the moment before.
Yeah,
or even the moments.
Cover up my crappy writing. But yeah, I gave him we talked a lot, and then we kind of split ways, and then the next week it was like he reached into my head and pulled out the thing that I was thinking about. That's amazing.
It did feel good to get happy emails back from Liz. It made it that much easier to do the next one and the next one.
Yeah. Had you spent much time in the space itself that all of this music was going to be going on in?
I can't say I've spent a lot of time down there. I've seen a few of the things that Liz has put on the stage and really enjoyed myself. But this feels to me like my introduction into the Brumbear family.
Okay.
And I'm grateful for it.
So you were agonizing over, okay, people are going to be crowded together in a basement hearing these songs for the first time.
No. No, I think I think I was really pleased with what was coming out, and actually more than anything, I can't wait for people to crowd into that basement and hear them.
Oh, cool.
Because the response has been really good so far. I mean, when you really are getting that kind of an immediate response from the people who are going to put it on, mm-hmm. I think that's a good sign. Because we're all a little bit hardened. We're all used to being around a script. We're used to being around songs, and we're used to, you know, sort of dealing with the material. And there's a bit of a maybe a disconnect from it that you almost have to adopt in order to be able to get through something. Yeah. You have to be able to approach the material with some kind of objectivity. And we can count on the fact that the audience member will allow themselves into your world and you know, have the full effect of their emotions as they're watching if there's something there really to move them. But I think when, in the process of working on it, if people are being moved, you know you're working with something that has some worth. And that's mm-hmm. been the case thus far.
Cool. Were you there for the rehearsal?
I haven't been to one yet. I've led the music rehearsals.
Okay.
So he's seen a couple of pieces of the show, and I mean, he got to see most of the script before any of the actors did, because we sat down first about this last March, believe it or not, and then forgot about it all summer. But we did sit down and have a talk about it, because it was tough. This was written largely over the course of the last Sherlock. So, like, Sherlock was going, and I was writing this, and then, so this was done early October. There had been an outline, you know, it hasn't really deviated from the outline he had last March. There had been a tweak or two, but other than that, apparently I can't write a script unless I'm already really committed to another. Doesn't work otherwise. And I know, but like I said, it was once we knew who we were casting, because this is the first one we also didn't hold open auditions for. I sat down and I was talking to people about the project. They were like, "I'd love to do that." And then it just kind of, they started jumping on board, and it got easier and easier to write because you knew who you were writing for. And I think that's probably kind of similar for Brian, because you knew who was going to be singing what too.
Absolutely. Both personalities and voice types. Mm-hmm. Yeah. All of those things informed musical choices and language usage too.
Did you get down there like and find out, oh, the acoustics here are awful for this particular
actually,
song?
Actually, no. I mean, they're not bad.
Mean, all the blocking happened on the fly and everything.
Well, actually, I will say we've blocked the whole book part. The music is getting done on Thursday.
Okay.
And Brian is coming in on Friday to do a full music rehearsal with the cast. And that's the first time that he's going to sit down with everybody, and the next week we're in tech. And then our preview is Wednesday.
It moves very quickly.
Yeah.
You have like a small window of time to solve any problems that might come about.
Yeah, and troubleshooting, I think you troubleshoot as much while you're writing the script as you possibly can. Mm-hmm. Anything that's going to cause a problem, anything, you realize it by handing it off to other people. Mm-hmm. I've always sent the script to, I think, at least 5 other people who are not a part of the cast, who edit and proofread and send it back to me, and then I take all their notes, and then the cast gets it, and then the cast gives me all their notes. So there are, you know, 12 to 15 rewrites that any given script I have goes through before people see it. And it keeps changing as you go, because you'll find a joke doesn't work when an audience is there, and then so you'll cut it for the next show. You go, okay, I'll figure out something else, or move over it faster, or whatever it is. It's not the most ideal way to put a show together, but it's worked for us thus far. And you find people that you trust, you find people that you like, and that you can lock yourself in a room with for 7 days straight, pretty much.
An underground room, no less.
Last night, there's a line in the show that's like, the ceiling is so thick you can't hear anything upstairs, and Kelly threw in a line, she just goes, you could kill a man down here. I can't look at Kelly ever. And all my scenes are with her in the room. It's so not good.
And she has no one to blame but herself for that.
It's all my fault. Because she's so funny. And Amanda is very funny in this, too. Amanda doesn't, like, as Irene Adler, she got to be kind of sexy and sultry, and she's been doing that for a while, but this one she gets to be cutesy and very much more like herself, which I think is nice, and it's a good break for a little bit.
The three of them together really are fantastic, and it's been a pleasure to just be in their company in the music rehearsals. We just have had a ball.
Cool.
So I think that the vibe between the three of them is really going to translate on stage as well.
Well, in the basement.
I should say, right. In the basement.
But it's all decked out for, it's really, really lovely down there right now. You'll
oh,
see
I would imagine, again. Yeah.
Because Tom Marks is just a brilliant set dresser, and especially because he always asks me what I want, too. I'm not quite used to that yet. He always does, but it's still very odd to walk into a room and go, what do you want from this? And go, ooh, everyone listens to me.
And for anyone who hasn't been there, it really is quite a warm space. Maybe we should stop using the B word, because it's really the lower level lounge, maybe we should say. But it's really warm down there. There's a great, I think, a great feeling and an ambiance in that room, even though it is on the lower level.
Yeah. I mean, the difference, though, is like, People are used to going to a show, and I mean like the majority of people who go to theater in Milwaukee are used to going to a show, and there's, you know, the glowing red exit signs, and,
right,
you know, the aisles, and like, you know.
I think it's fair to say that it is an alternative sort of theatrical experience, but I think that that's probably more of a good thing than a bad thing.
Yeah.
It gives people an opportunity to see this historic building, which I think any Milwaukee native or resident should be aware of.
Mm-hmm. And it goes back to the idea of trying to pretend. We don't pretend that the building is something that it's not. In the show, it is a bed and breakfast. You're in a bed and breakfast in the show. Bertie and Herb Wallace are the proprietors of an inn. We're like, what do we have? We have an inn.
Right.
Let's use the inn.
Always. Yeah, always use it. Anytime you're presented with anything.
Yeah. Yeah. So is this the style it's written in? Is this like the 1940s Frank Capra style film that you never saw, or because there's the Hollywood conception, the stage conception of what life right after World War II was like. And then there's what would actually happen, which is a lot darker.
I think we get a weird hybrid of that, depending on which characters you're looking at. There are some characters that are definitely living the Frank Capra idealism of the American dream and getting exactly what they needed after the war. Happy family, home life, dog, the whole thing. And then in the character of Fred, which is really a lovely job done by John Glowacki, who's not as well off after the war. He's a little traumatized by it. And the family acknowledges it. Nobody tries to pretend that he's not doing, that this hasn't changed him in some way. So you get to see that in the different characters as well. And you get to see that in the parents. They're worried about both their sons for very different reasons.
Does that feed into the music at all? Is there like dark, moodier moments?
Yeah. Yeah, the song that John's character works on is a bit of a sad one, and there's a tradition in Christmas music, there's a lot of sort of bittersweet melodies, you know, and so that was a big part of what I was thinking about when I was writing his tune, but it couldn't have been a total downer either.
I think we had a conversation right about that, because I wanted to take it in a way that was a little bit darker, and I told that to Brian. I was like, well, the original script said this, and you were like, you want to sell tickets, right? I was like...
And in fact, there's a bit of this story comes into the naming of this tune. I think the first thing I wrote down on the top of the manuscript paper was Holiday Without You, and the beginning of the lyrics are A Holiday Without You is Not a Holiday at All, or something along those lines. But at the end at the end of the song there is redemption, and without giving too much away, there's a happy ending at the end of the song. And so I erased Holiday Without You and rewrote Holiday with a Holiday with You, because that's what he desires. In the beginning of the song, he's lamenting the idea of a holiday without, you know, the one that he loves. But in the end, it's
hoping that maybe he'd be able to fix it.
Right.
And that's kind of a overlying arc for that character. He's continually searching for a way to fix the mistakes that he's made. It sounds a lot headier than it probably... There is a lot of light stuff in the show, too. Kelly's character, Nick Vandenabel, we haven't mentioned him yet. He's a Bye Bye Liver alum. This is his first show outside of Bye Bye Liver. Kelly and I were talking about it. He was a late addition to the cast as well. He wasn't in a lot of the first iterations of the script.
Yeah, doesn't sound... Is he more of a comedy guy?
He is. He's a stand-up comic. Okay. And like I said, he did Bye Bye Liver, but this is his first... And I wouldn't say straight play, because there's a lot of comedy in it, specifically with his character. But he came in, he plays a character by the name of Miles Harper, who's an accountant for the city. And I'm not necessarily going to say how that comes into play, because that gives a little bit too much away. But Nick does a great job with it. Like, he was very nervous coming in. I don't know if I should say that. But he was so nervous coming in, and everybody was so impressed with him, because he handles everything so well, and he's just happy to... Everybody... This is one of the most positive casts I've ever been a part of. They're all just... Everybody's so excited. Not that I haven't worked with casts before that aren't, but not like this. This is like, you know, the Christmas mice put on a show. Hooray! There's so much positivity.
It's good. And you need it. You need that kind of positive vibe to be able to do the amount of work that people are trying to do in the span of time in which we have to do it.
Mm-hmm. And again, trust comes back to trust. You go, I'm going to trust that you're going to work on your stuff. I call it a homework show. I always say, because Pirates of Penzance this last summer, that was a homework show. There, we didn't have a whole lot of rehearsals. You've got to go home and be on your game when you come back in. And if you're not...
Fucking really, there's no... Yeah. So how many performances?
10 or 12, I think. Let's see. Including our preview... 13 including our previous is 12.
Wow. And it's a mix of evenings and afternoons.
Mm-hmm. But it's quick, because it's in 2 weeks. It's 12 performances in 2 weeks.
What's the best place, Liz, for people to go for information about
MilwaukeeEntertainmentGroup.com. Yeah. Wow. It's where you can get all the information about tickets. And also, there's some behind-the-scenes information, the cast photos, and that's a great place to go if you want more information about the show.
Wow. So I really don't have to do any work after this. I can just post this.
Yep.